to his own. Would it be so bad? Would Mahmed resist, be surprised? Or would he answer with his own lips in a way Radu never dared allow himself to imagine? And then Mahmed pulled back. I know you will accomplish this. Visit the cathedral of the Hagia Sophia for me. I will see you inside the walls of Constantinople. Inside the walls? Radu echoed hollowly, as Mahmed released him and left as quickly as he had come. 12. Late February. If Lada had to endure this torture, the least her tormentor could do was pretend not to be so happy about it. Her nurse hummed and sang tunelessly as she finally got her way with Lada's hair. I could kill Bogdan for finding you again, Lada said. It was not easy. My boy is cleverer than he looks, her nurse paused. But not by much, Lada snickered. Then she cursed as her head was yanked sideways, hair caught on the comb. If he wanted his mother, that is fine. But I do not understand why you are still pretending to be my nurse. You silly child. Bogdan did not bring me for himself. He had barely greeted me before telling me that you needed someone to take care of you while you saved Valahia. Which he absolutely believes you will do. Ever since you could talk, he has belonged to you. He would do anything for you then, and he will do anything for you now. Lada did not have a response to that. She had taken Bogdan's loyalty for granted as a child. When they found each other again, falling back into the same patterns had been effortless. But she knew now, after Matei, that loyalty was not a given. I did not ask him to find you. Well, Radu was the one who loved me, but I love you enough. For both of us. The comb caught on another snarl. God's wounds, nurse! Lada paused, gritting her teeth against the pain. I cannot keep calling you nurse! What is your name? The nurse paused, her fingers on Lada's temple. She stroked once, so lightly, Lada wondered if it had been intentional. Wana. Fine, Wana. When will you be finished? The nurse, no, Wana, laughed. She had lost most of her teeth in the years since they had parted. Lada had always thought her old, but now she realized Wana must have been a very young woman when she began taking care of her and Radu. In truth, Lada could not believe the woman was still alive. In Lada's mind, she had ceased existing once they were taken to Adirna. But Wana was strong and sturdy, as capable as ever. Tonight, Lada both loved and hated her for that. It is easier to destroy than to build, Wana said. And you have been destroying your looks for a long time now. Lada could not enjoy the irony of hearing her nurse's, Wana's, favourite phrase used in relation not to the burning of Transylvania, but to the styling of hair. What does it matter? I am swearing loyalty to a foreign king as a soldier, not as a girl. These things matter, little one. Now hold still. Wana smacked the hard wooden edge of the comb against Lada's temple. Lada was certain it had been intentional. The tiny room they had been given in the castle at Hunidwara had no fire. The stones themselves seemed to have been carved out of ice. Twice Wana had had to break the frozen top layer of the water bowl. Lada shivered violently, but not as violently as her thoughts were turning under the continued assault of the comb. Finally satisfied, Wana helped her dress. The replacement king, Ladislas, had gifted her with a dress. Lada knew it would be disrespectful and even dangerous to reject it. Still, it was a good thing the room had no fire, otherwise the dress would be feeding it. Lada slapped Wana's hands away when she tied the underclothes too tight. Wana slapped Lada's hands away in return. By the end, they were both red-faced and sweating, having fought a more intense battle over getting Lada into the dress than Lada had ever endured. I cannot breathe in this damnable thing! Lada tried to lift her arms, but the sleeves were not made for her broad shoulders or thick arms. She could barely move. Wana had to let out the waist some, and Lada's breast still spilled out from the top of the bodice. Wana tucked extra fabric in there, trying to cover the soft mounds. "This weighs more than my chainmail." Larda tugged at the layers of material that made up the skirts, and something stiffer sewn in to keep their shape. "Think of it as armor." Larda's lip curled in a sneer. "What could this possibly protect me from? Mockery? Ridicule? Your men are used to you, but this is a court. You have to do things a certain way. Do not mess this up." Wana yanked on one of Larda's curls as she tucked it back into the elaborate style. A lacy kerchief went over the top of it all. "Radu should be here." Larda stared down in despair. "I do not know how to talk to these people." "He was always better at that. How did he fare when you left?" "I worried for him. I thought they would kill you and break Radu's heart." There was a wistful tenderness in Wana's voice. Larda took a deep breath, or tried to. She could not manage it in this abomination of a dress. She and her nurse had not really spoken of Radu since Wana had asked where he was. The truth was as cold and brittle as the ice in her water bowl. He grew into a new man. Smart, sly, too handsome, and eventually, into a stranger to me. She had had no word from Radu. No news. She wanted to tell Wana that Radu was coming, but it had been so long. What if he was not? When I left, he chose the Ottomans. So you were wrong. I survived, and Radu grew a new heart. Do you have nothing in common, then? A strangled laugh escaped the prison of her bodice. Well, one thing. Larda wondered yet again whether her absence had granted Radu the portion of Mahmed's attention and love that he so desperately craved. And yet again, she forced herself not to think on it. Larda tugged at the bodice, trying to shift it to make it more comfortable. She missed her Ottoman finery. At least those draped layers of tunics and robes were comfortable. "I'm going to give the wrong impression wearing this."
"You mean a good impression?"
"Yes, exactly." Wana surveyed her with a critical eye, then threw her hands up in surrender.
"This is the best we can hope for, at least as far as your looks. As far as everything else tonight, pretend you are Radu."
A small pang hit just above Larda's heart. Did Wana wish that it were Radu and not Larda she had been reunited with? Everyone always loved Radu best. And now Radu and Mahmed had each other, and all Larda had was this woman who wielded a comb as a weapon. Well, Larda could be Radu for one night, she grimaced, and smiled broadly and opened her large eyes as wide as she could. It was her best imitation of him. Wana recoiled.
"That is terrifying, girl. I was wrong. Be yourself."
Larda let her hooded eyelids drop low. She had never been able to be anyone else. The castle at Hunidwara was small compared with anything in Edirne, but bigger than Turgoviste. A moat surrounded it, with a hill on the back side of the castle that dropped off steeply. Larda liked looking out over the wall at the winter landscape stretching into the hazy distance. She pretended she could see Valahia from there. But tonight, there was no time for that. She left her tiny room and traversed the back tower's serpentine stairs. For a few terrifying moments, she thought the dress would actually be the death of her, but she managed to make it to the bottom. Stefan met her there. He was the only one of her men who spoke Hungarian, though no one else knew it. He would gather information as he always did, snatching pieces and organizing them into a whole for her. They walked across the open courtyard in the center of the castle, then through a massive wooden door into the throne room. The floor was brightly tiled, though no tile was impressive to Larda here. After Edirne, everything except churches seemed drab. The walls of this castle were whitewashed and hung with elaborate tapestries and gilded framed paintings of mournful-looking Hungarian royalty. Larda had gotten used to large, lovely windows during her time in Edirne. She had forgotten that castles elsewhere were not for ornamentation, but rather for defense. To compensate, chandeliers dripped with light, and two fireplaces roared cheerily. If her room had been freezing, the throne room was stifling. Larda had always thought it weakness when women fainted, but now she understood. It was not their bodies. It was their clothes. She was not the only thing on the schedule for the evening. After interminable droning speeches in Hungarian, it was finally her turn. Kneeling in front of the king was a relief, if only to get off her feet. As she knelt, there were some tittering laughs and shocked whispers. The man who went before her had knelt. What was she expected to do instead? To her horror, she realized there was nothing she could do. In her dress, she could not get up again on her own. Her face burning, she looked up at the king. Ladislas Posthumus, the painfully young replacement for the previous monarch, trembled. At first Lada had thought him cold or frightened, but the trembling continued unabated. He was stricken with some sort of palsy, his illness showing in his every movement. Lada did not have to be ruthless to see that this was a king who would not last. Younger than her, physically weaker than her, and still he was more important than her. So she bowed her head and murmured the words. She vowed to protect the Transylvanian frontier. No one objected that she had come directly from terrorizing it, and to keep the borders safe from the Ottoman threat. Finally, she swore her fealty to him and the crown of Hungary. The crown that was nowhere to be seen. Certainly not on Ladislas's trembling head. When Lada had finished, she stayed where she was, utterly humiliated. She could not get up, and she could not ask for help. A hand at her elbow rescued her. Stefan smiled wanly at her as he steadily guided her back to her feet. Hoping her expression hid her relief, she nodded at him as gracefully as she could manage. They walked back to their position at the rear of the room. After the official business ended, everyone remained. Apparently there was always an informal reception afterward. Lada leaned against a wall for support. Every part of her hurt, from being held in an unfamiliar position by her dress. No one spoke to her. She knew she should try to strike up conversations, try to gain allies, but she could not smile. She was gritting her teeth too hard to manage it. She was as likely to kill anyone who talked to her as she was to make a friend. No, she was far more likely to kill someone than to make a friend. Only when she could not place her source of vague disappointments did she come to a horrible realization. She had thought if she looked like a noblewoman, men would talk to her. Of course, she would have rejected their flirtations, but she had been preparing herself to do that. She had not prepared herself to remain utterly invisible while wearing a dress and with her hair combed. Or maybe she was so unbelievable in a dress, or had humiliated herself so completely by kneeling, that no one would ever believe she belonged among nobility. Lada was taken back to Mehmed's wedding, standing alone, always alone, without a place and without worth. She drew a ragged breath. This was not the same. She was not that person. She had more than just Mehmed and Radu now. But she did not have them any more. Tonight, she felt the full weight of that loss. The loss of a brother who would have stood at her side and fought this battle of manners and politics for her. The loss of a man who would have laughed at her dress and her hair, but also been desperate to be alone so he could undo it all for her. Perhaps she had never stopped being that girl lost in a place where she could never have power. It took Lada several minutes to realize Stefan had returned from his rounds. "What did you find?" she asked, relieved and grateful for a familiar face. Even one as anonymous and blank as Stefan's. "The crown," he said, nodding toward where Ladislas spoke with several priests and a tall, confident-looking older man. The rest of the royalty revolved around two men and a regal woman. The woman was glorious, Lada had to admit. She truly wore her elaborate clothes as armor, not something to wilt under like Lada did. The way she commanded the attention of everyone around her, shooting frequent sharp glances at the king, reminded Lada of Huma, Mehmed's mother. Huma had been so sick when Lada left. Surely she was dead by now. The thought of Huma's death made Lada oddly mournful. The woman had been a threat, and a murderer too, but she had been so good at everything she did. The woman in layered, gold-embroidered finery briefly met Lada's eyes. Lada felt herself weighed and summarily dismissed. It stung. "Where is the crown?" Lada asked, glad Stefan was here to distract her. After Varna, the Polish king took it for safekeeping. But no one can truly be king of Hungary without the crown. Elizabeth is trying everything she can to secure it. Elizabeth? Stefan nodded toward the glittering woman. Suddenly it all made sense. She is his mother? Lada asked. She is the true ruler of Hungary. But she does not have the money to buy the crown back, and until Ladislas has it, his rule is illegitimate. The man next to him is Ulrich, his regent. Between him and Elizabeth, this country is run. I suspect Ladislas's rule will be as short in stature as he is. No one speaks outright of killing him. They do not speak of him at all. He does not matter. Elizabeth is the throne. And Ulrich? The most likely successor. The connection to the royal line is distant, but there. He is modest, just, and well-liked. How do you know? I spoke with his servants. It is the best way to get a sense of a man. And the other. They were interrupted by silence, which was followed by a wave of noise. Lada followed the crowd's eyes to a doorway in which Hunyadi stood. The day before, he had ridden out to the Transylvanian border to respond to a problem there. Judging by the riding cloak he wore on his shoulders and the weariness on his face, he had only now returned. A chorus of cheers filled the room as he smiled and lifted one hand. People surged forward to speak with him. Elizabeth watched with narrowed eyes. Then the crowd parted for her, and she greeted Hunyadi with a lingering embrace. "He could have it all," Lada said. Stefan shook his head. "He will not take it. But he controls the soldiers, which means he has more power than anyone else in this castle." It was similar in Wallachia. The prince was allowed no troops of his own, permitted no fortresses or defense. He was entirely dependent on the boyars, each of whom kept his own soldiers at the ready. It did not make for powerful leaders. "King Ladislas," waved to Hunyadi. Hunyadi did not see it. Lada pitied the king then. But more than that, she hated him for being weak. This was his country, and he let another man have all the power. He deserved to lose everything. Lada did not understand why Elizabeth depended on a feeble son rather than taking the throne herself. Huma had played the same game, and in the end it had seen her banished. Power through sons was no more secure than power through husbands. "You said there was another contender for the throne?" Lada asked Stefan. One man had not moved forward to greet Hunyadi. He stood alone, dark eyes calculating, as he watched everyone who mattered in Hungary clamoring for a moment of Hunyadi's attention. Though he was far leaner than Hunyadi and dressed in more finery than Hunyadi would ever wear, Lada saw the same determined jaw, the same confident brow. But where Hunyadi's eyes were bold and honest, his sons were calculating and secretive. "Matthias," Stefan said. Lada watched Matthias throughout the evening. He never so much as glanced her way, so she had ample time to study him without fear of being caught. He wore a smile as ostentatiously as he wore the gold chain at his neck and the jeweled pins on his vest. It was ornamentation, meant to dazzle, but always his eyes were narrowed and shrewd as he spoke to this person or another, or in many cases did not speak to them. Hunyadi had been drawn into a corner, trapped by an impassable wall of dresses. Lada did not envy him. He was a widower and the most powerful man in the country. The fact that he had no family name paled in comparison to his wealth. She wished he could break free so they could speak. Of what, it did not matter. But he was her only ally here, and she might as well have been alone. Nikolai sidled up to Lada. He had secured some clothes nice enough to gain him access. She did not know where or how he had obtained the clothing, and she did not care. It was a relief to see him. "You should dance, or at least speak to someone," he said. Lada shook her head. "It will do no good.
I belong here as much as a pig in a dress does, and everyone will know as soon as I open my mouth. I actually saw several pigs in dresses as I came in. Not a single one got past the door. You are definitely doing better than they are. Shaking her head, Larda let Nikolai lead her away from the wall. Look, no one is speaking to the king. Nikolai nudged her in that direction. Talk to him. No one speaks to him because he does not matter. I have pledged my loyalty for nothing. Something in Larda's tone must have warned Nikolai, because he immediately turned them both around and steered Larda out of the throne room and into the freezing night air of the courtyard. He smiled and nodded to everyone they passed, quickly taking them through the gate and across the bridge. Larda leaned heavily against one of the stone pillars. I knelt in there and swore fealty to another king. A foreign king for nothing, Nikolai. He will not help me get my throne. He cannot even get his own crown. What have I accomplished? Nikolai took her hands in his. You do what you must. It is no different from what the little zealot does, making treaties and creating alliances that mean less than the paper they are written on. Your brother would have done the same. You must survive, and Hungary has welcomed you. Take advantage of it. Hunyadi is a powerful ally. In spite of your best efforts, he cares about you. This is a good situation. It is certainly better than hiding in the woods, picking on Transylvania. But it is not what we came for. Nikolai shrugged, stamping his feet against the cold. I came to get away from the Ottomans. We all did. You gave that to us. Matei was spying on me, she said. She had told no one, holding the information close out of shame, anger, and perhaps a bit of guilt over his death. He was reporting to Mahmed. Nikolai uttered a sad oath, his breath fogging into the night air. Matei was a fool, then. I will keep a sharper eye on everyone. But I know this. You have done many things for us already. We are in a good position. You fight at Hunyadi's side. Foreign kings accept your allegiance. Your men respect and are loyal to you. He smiled. That is quite a bit for a little dragon from Valahia. Larda knew he was trying to help her, and she was comforted that her men were satisfied. She had gotten them out of slavery, led them successfully in battle, earned the respect of one of the greatest men of her time. She stared numbly into the night. The Hungarian night, not the Valachian night. It was not enough. Never enough. XIII. Late March. Radu had only an hour before the party, before he would need to persuade Cyprian that he was ready to betray Mahmed and join Emperor Constantine's cause. He hurried to Kamal's house. Kamal was not there, but he was not whom Radu needed to speak with. Nazira, he called, bursting through the front door. Fatima! Nazira! Nazira rushed into the front room, Fatima close behind her. Nazira held a cloth in her hands, dripping water along the floor. Concern pinched her face. What is it?
I am leaving. For Constantinople.
They march already? So soon?
No, I... Radu paused, looking around the room. Are we alone?
Yes, of course.
Radu sat suddenly exhausted. He looked down at his hands. Mahmed has asked me to defect. I am to convince an ambassador that I wish to aid Emperor Constantine. If all goes to plan, I will run tonight.
Nazira covered her mouth with a wet cloth, then dropped it. Tonight?
Yes.
But what if they find out you are still loyal to Mahmed?
They cannot. I have to pretend to want a new life with them. They must think I am never coming back. I do not know what Mahmed will tell Kumal, but I wanted you to know the truth. I will not be able to write or communicate in any way.
A sudden determination hardened Nazira's face. That will not be a problem. I am coming with you.
What? No, you cannot.
Radu stood again in disbelief. I can and I will.
You have taken care of us all this time. Now it is my turn to repay you. It is too much to bear this secret alone. I will go, as your wife.
It is too dangerous. If they discover me, they will kill us both.
Which is exactly why I need to come. Why would a man put his beloved wife in that much danger? My mere presence will sell your loyalty in a way nothing else could. Besides, I have spent all these years studying Greek. It is about time I got to use it.
Radu shook his head aghast. He turned to Fatima for support. Tell her this is insane.
Fatima looked as though she wanted to cry, but she shook her head instead. Nasira is right, she whispered. It is the best way to keep you safe. We will come.
But you hate to travel. Radu looked back at Nasira triumphant. You cannot ask Fatima to come.
I am not. Nasira turned to Fatima, cupping her face gently in her hands. She put her lips to the other girl's ear, whispering something Radu could not hear. Then she said, You understand?
Fatima shook her head, silent tears streaming down her face.
I can come, she whispered. I want to be wherever you are.
And I want to be wherever you are.
But I need you to be safe.
Nasira regarded Fatima with a tenderness that hurt Radu to see.
I can weather this storm for both of us, but only if I have the shelter in my heart of knowing that my Fatima is well.
Fatima shook her head again, then nodded, crying.
I will come back to you. Always.
Nasira closed the distance between their mouths in the exact way Radu had imagined Mahmed doing with him. But this kiss was infinitely more sweet, more intimate than any Radu had ever imagined to dream of. He looked away, unwilling to intrude on the two women's love and heartbreak. Nasira cleared her throat. Radu turned back to find her still holding Fatima close. Fatima hid her face in Nazira's shoulder, but Nazira's face was ferocious.
When do we leave?
Cyprian was waiting outside the grand doors to Mahmed's party. Though the ambassador had carefully composed himself, his nerves showed in the way his fingers tapped unceasingly against his blue-clad leg. Radu did not care for the styles out of Constantinople. He found the deliberate exposing of multiple layers of clothes to be gaudy and vain. But unlike that of the other ambassadors, Cyprian's layers were coordinated and less jarring. Radu supposed he himself would be wearing clothes like that soon. He did not realize he was running his fingers along his turban until they caught in one of the folds. And prayer. When would he pray? Being cut off from prayer with his brothers would be like being cut off from sleep. He could already feel his soul wearing thin and tired simply from contemplating it. He would find a way to pray. He had to. Even if he could only pray in his heart, God would understand. Light and music spilled from the doorway, a jarring accompaniment to Radu's bleak thoughts. There was no use in delay. He crossed the hall to Cyprian, whose visage flashed a brief look of happiness before worry claimed it once more.
You came, Cyprian said. I had begun to fear you would not.
We are all of us slaves to the whims of the Sultan. Radu hated the way the words flowed smoothly out of his mouth, as though they belonged there. Cyprian, this is Nasira, my wife. A momentary twist of confusion distorted Cyprian's face as he finally noticed Nasira at Radu's side.
Your wife?
With movements formed by years of habit, Cyprian reached out and took her hand, bowing and kissing it.
Hello,
Nasira said, her voice strained. She looked over her shoulder constantly. Radu did not know how much of it was nerves and how much was acting to sell their deception to Cyprian.
I did not expect you to have a wife.
Cyprian frowned, then shook his head.
I mean, you are so young. My age.
Radu smiled tightly.
When you find someone like Nasira, you do not wait.
He looked past Cyprian toward the party and then back down the hall.
Can we speak in private?
He asked in a low voice.
Of course.
Cyprian followed them out into a side garden.
the same side garden Radu had come to so many times to read and then destroy Mahmed's secret notes. In the face of what he was moving toward, he longed to have even that level of closeness again. As soon as they were far enough into the garden, Radu turned to Cyprian.
We want to leave.
What?
Right now. We cannot pretend to support Mahmed anymore. His father kidnapped me, tortured me, stole my entire childhood. I cannot stand by and watch as Mahmed takes Constantinople the same way.
Cyprian wilted.
So he does mean to attack, as soon as he is ready.
Can you get us to the city, to the emperor? I will do whatever I can. I grew up with Mahmed and served him. I am familiar with his true temperament and many of his plans.
I can help you.
Cyprian nodded. Mahmed had been right. Cyprian must have planned to try to get information from Radu. Why else would he be so quick to trust them?
We should leave right now, he said. We are ready.
Radu pulled his and Azira's traveling bags from behind a stone bench.
She is coming.
Cyprian's surprise was confirmation of what Nazira had said. No one turning spy would risk the life of an innocent woman. Please, Radu prayed, please let Nazira come through this safely. It was one thing to gamble with his own life for Mahmed's cause. He felt sick knowing he was also risking Nazira's.
Radu is my husband.
Nazira gripped his hand. Some of Radu's fear was soothed. It was selfish to draw any amount of happiness from her sacrifice, but he could not help it.
Where he goes, I go.
Very well.
They followed Cyprian to the guest stables where he found one of the ambassador's servant boys. The boy was small, with intelligent eyes and black hair, thick and tangled like thatch. After a quick, whispered conversation, the boy saddled three horses. Though Radu knew perfectly well they would not be followed, Cyprian's paranoia was contagious. Radu found himself glancing over his shoulder as they rode through the city. His last view as they crested the hill outside Edirne was the same as the first he had ever had of the Empire. Spires and minarets were black points against the starlit sky. He bid them a silent farewell, praying that they would watch over the city in his absence. Early March. Larda was not certain which was more surprising, that she had been invited to one of Hunyadi's inner circle councils, or that his son, Matthias, had not. Hunyadi sat at the head of the table, with several similarly grizzled men around him. At the opposite end of the table sat two priests. The seat next to Hunyadi was empty. He stood and gestured for Larda to sit there. The sting of invisibility that had plagued her in the week since swearing her loyalty disappeared as she sat at Hunyadi's right hand. As soon as she was settled, he leaned forward, slamming a fist against the table.
"Constantinople!" he roared. "Once again it faces a threat, perhaps the greatest threat it has ever known. We cannot let the heart of Christendom, Rome of old, fall to the infidels. If Constantinople succumbs to the Muslim plague, what is to stop them from spreading over the whole world?"
One of the priests nodded vehemently. The other remained impassive. A few of the men were engaged, but several leaned away from the table as though distancing themselves from the topic.
"What are you suggesting?" the excited priest asked.
"We crusade, as we have before. We gather the righteous until we swell around the walls like God's own wave, to forever drown the infidel threat."
The other priest smiled dryly.
"I believe the last successful Christian crusade actually sacked Constantinople."
Hunyadi huffed, waving away the words with his hands.
"Italians, they have no honor. If we let the Muslims take Constantinople, the heart of Eastern Christendom, what is next? Transylvania, Hungary? Long have we stood between Islam's expansion and the rest of Europe. As defenders of Christ, we cannot ignore the plight of Constantinople."
Larda watched, trying to figure out Hunyadi's angle. The Ottoman Empire already surrounded Constantinople. If the city fell, it gave him a virtually impregnable capital.
but it did not move them any closer to Hungary or the rest of Europe. The threat was merely spiritual, not physical. It would be demoralizing to lose the great city, but not damaging, at least not to Hungary.
"You have led us against the Sultan before,"
said one of the men, his head shiny and bold, but his beard still dark.
"We fought with you at Varna. We lost our king. Hungary still suffers the consequences and will continue to until the crown is once again stable. Why would we risk that again for Constantinople?"
"It is not about Hungary. It is about Christianity. Have you heard of the priest who led peasants, ordinary peasants, against the Ottomans? They drove them back with the ferocity of their faith. They won a decisive and shocking victory because Christ was on their side."
"Yes," the bold man said, rubbing his face wearily. "And then the priest caught the plague, and most of the peasants froze to death."
Lada watched as Hunyadi tugged on his beard, trying to impose his intensity on the other men. He had no angle, she realized. There was no political advantage for him personally at Constantinople. If anything, he stood to lose all he had worked so hard to build here for himself and his son. Listening to him talk and argue, Lada could not help but be stirred. He was passionate and charming, utterly adamant in his belief that defending Constantinople was the right thing to do. She weighed it against Mahmed's fervent desire for the city. She knew others thought he did it for gain. Even his own men wanted the city only for the rumored riches. But that was not what moved Mahmed. Mahmed felt the weight of prophecy and the burden of his god on his shoulders. That would not disappear until he took the city or died trying. Lada wondered how the world could survive with men such as Mahmed and Hunyadi on opposite sides. Or perhaps that was how it did survive. If they served the same purpose, she could not imagine any nation not falling before their combined might. Each god, Christian and Muslim, had champions keeping the other at bay. Whose side would she fall on? Could she join Hunyadi? Could she go against Mahmed? That evening, Lada walked, Stefan at her side. He did not have much to report, other than that the king's mother did not like Hunyadi and was trying to either subvert or marry him. "What do you think about Constantinople?" Lada asked, looking up through the bare branches at the twilight sky.
"Hunyadi does not have enough support to go fight, but he will. The king's mother is encouraging him. She hopes he will die there and solve some of her problems. She will make certain he has the forces and the funding he needs."
"I mean you. What do you think? What do the men think? If I asked them to march with Hunyadi and defend the walls, would they?" Stefan was quiet for a long time. Then he lifted his shoulders.
"I think they would.
But it is not our goal. It is not what has kept us together."
"Goals change," he said simply. "If you ask, most will follow. Will you?"
A ghost of a smile disrupted the blank space of his face.
"I do not know."
Lada nodded, looking back up at the sky. "That is fine. I do not know either." 2 weeks after the council about Constantinople, Hunyadi invited Lada to dine in the castle. She always ate with her men, so this was unusual. Against her better judgment, she agreed, but only after Hunyadi said she did not have to wear a dress. She would not put herself through that again. She entered the dining room with her back as straight as a sword, hair tied in a black cloth in defiance of the elaborate styles of the Hungarian court. She need not have worried so much, dress or trousers, curls or cloth. She was still invisible. As dishes of food were passed by servants, Lada tried to listen to the conversations around her. Her dinner companions spoke of people she did not know, of matters that did not concern her. Nowhere was there anything for her to contribute to or even enjoy. The familiarity of it all exhausted her. It was the same as what she had grown up with. Circles of gossip, words and favors traded for power, deals made for which the nobility would see none of the work and all of the benefit. Since she had nothing to offer anyone, no one paid her the slightest mind. Hunyadi fared better. He was wildly popular, regaled with requests to tell stories of his conquest, but his otherness was inescapable. He was a soldier through and through, and though he was undeniably charming, there was a gruff directness to him that was out of place here. The nobles deferred to him with a certain patronizing arrogance. The king's mother, Elizabeth, asked him for story after story, each circling back to his childhood. Lada realized with a spike of anger what it was. Hunyadi was their pet. They were proud of his accomplishments, boastful of what he had done, but they would never, ever see him as their equal. And Elizabeth made certain no one forgot where he came from. He was worth more than every glittering waste of a person in this whole castle. Though Hunyadi never drank when they were campaigning or riding, Lada watched as he downed glass after glass of wine. She revised her previous thought that he was doing better than she. He was miserable. As the meal broke up and people stood in groups to talk, Hunyadi suggested dancing several times. Lada had seen him dance. He was a wonderful dancer, and she understood his need to do something with his body. Movement was freedom. But there were no musicians, and his suggestions were met with laughter, as though he jested. Lada stomped across the room and took his elbow. "I need him," she snapped at the courtesans, polluting the air with their aggressive perfume. They pouted, protesting mildly that he had not finished his story, but as soon as Lada removed Hunyadi, they filled the space as though he had never existed.
"Thank you," Hunyadi said, swaying slightly. "These people are more terrifying than a contingent of Yanacheris,
and far more ruthless." Lada guided him toward the door, but he stumbled to a stop, a smile of true joy parting the haze of alcohol on his expression.
"Matthias!"
Matthias, his own auburn hair oiled and carefully styled, unlike his father's mane, paused in his conversation with several other men. Lada knew he had heard Hunyadi, but he continued, as though he had not.
"Matthias!"
Hunyadi barreled over, clapping his hands on the young man's shoulders. Matthias's answering smile was as carefully styled as his hair.
"Father?" "Matthias, I wanted you to meet Lada Dracul."
Hunyadi turned back to her and gestured at Matthias with unabashed pride. Matthias's answering whisper of a sneer made Lada wish to run her sword through him. He gave her a perfunctory bow.
"So, you are the feral girl of Valahia he has taken under his wing."
The men around him laughed. One made an obscene gesture behind Hunyadi's back. Their opinion of her relationship with him was evident. Lada sensed that Matthias had never been privy to his father's idea of marrying them.
"Lada single-handedly defeated a whole Bolgar contingent. Saved my life. And she grew up with Sultan Mahmed. Invaluable insight. Very clever."
Hunyadi smiled at Lada with the same level of pride as he had shown for his son, and something inside her broke.
"Is that so?" One of the men leaned forward, leering. "Tell me, is it true what they say, that he has 1,000 women in his harem, and another harem made up entirely of boys?"
Lada felt the familiar stab of anger that always accompanied mention of the harem, and a brief spike of fear. A male harem. Was such a thing possible? Was Radu? She shoved those feelings down with an unexpected defensiveness on her brother's behalf. How must Radu, already tormented by the impossibility of his love, feel when he heard such insinuations used as slander? Besides, these men did not know Mahmed. How dare they speak of him this way? She raised an eyebrow coolly. "If you are so interested in male harems, I can introduce you to the Sultan, though you are not quite pretty enough for his tastes." The man's face turned a dangerous shade of red. Hunyadi let out a barking burst of laughter and clapped Matthias on the back. His son cringed, then carefully reset his face. "I believe Elizabeth would like to speak to you," he said to his father. Hunyadi groaned. The leering man spoke again. "I believe she would like to do more than speak with you," Matthias pretended outraged, but it was all in jest. Hunyadi was embarrassed. Response was impossible. He could not impugn Elizabeth's honor, nor did he want to criticize Matthias's friends. Larda could bear no more. "The room is too warm. Will you see me out?" Hunyadi nodded graciously, offering his arm. She steered him once more toward the door and grabbed a bottle of wine on their way. She handed it to him wordlessly. They walked through the center courtyard, then over the bridge, descending the bank to a bare weeping willow. Hunyadi slipped several times, nearly taking them both down. Larda's thoughts were on Mahmed. It was so strange, hearing accounts of the Mahmed that the world saw, seemingly infinite versions of the same person, each distorted and exaggerated. But she knew the real him. Or did she? He had spied on her. He had sent her to Valachia with his support, and then supported her rival. He had married and fathered children, all while professing his love for her. And through it all, he had never taken his sights off Constantinople. He would not, could not. Not even for her. Could she really consider fighting for Constantinople, knowing it would be going directly against Mahmed and everything he had been to her? She did not think she could raise a sword against him. As much as she loved Hunyadi and hated the Ottomans, it would not be the Ottomans she would truly be fighting. It would be Mahmed. She remembered those warm nights together, cocooned in her room, plotting and planning the attack on the city. It had felt like playing pretend, but it had never been pretend for Mahmed. Constantinople was his dream, the one thing he would not give up. Everything was to that end, including supporting her rival on the Valachian throne. He had sacrificed her dreams for his. Maybe she would go to defend the walls.
"Did you see him?"
Hunyadi said once they were sitting. Larda startled out of her thoughts. "Mahmed?" Hunyadi laughed.
"No, my son. He looks like a king."
Larda thought that was not a thing to be proud of. She weighed her next words as judiciously as she could. "He is nothing like you," Hunyadi smiled, nodding.
"I know. I do not understand him. But I have worked with blood and sweat my whole life, so he could have access to everything that I never could. My sword has cut a way to the courts for him. He never has to do what I have done. I gave him that."
Hunyadi lowered his head, closing his eyes.
"I think he has a chance at the throne. Can you imagine? I am the son of peasants, and my son could be king. Everything I have done, all that I have lost, all the struggle and death, it was for him."
Larda remembered the look of pride he had given her. Matthias did not deserve Hunyadi. "I wish you had been my father," she said. If Hunyadi were her father, everything would be easier. She would jump at the chance to crusade with him, to fight at his side. If Hunyadi were her father, she would never have known Mahmed, never had her loyalties twisted and tugged into strange new shapes, and her heart would not have to constantly shield itself on the part that missed Mahmed so desperately. Hunyadi would have protected Radu too, and Radu would have appreciated him in a way Matthias was incapable of. Hunyadi patted her arm with his heavy hand.
"Do not wish away what you are. If you were my daughter, I would have extinguished your fire long ago. I would have given you the best tutors and the finest clothes and made you into a pretty doll to be traded away in marriage. I did the same with my son. I made him into someone I do not know, and it fills me with both pride and sadness. That is the best we can do for our children. Turn them into strangers with better hopes than we ever had. Your father was a fool and a coward, but his choices shaped you into the fearsome creature you are. I do not want to imagine a world in which you are not you.
For years, Larda had nurtured only hatred for her father, to take away the pain that loving him had left her with. But that night, in her tent, as she drifted to sleep, she let some of it go, because she, too, was grateful for who she was. She would not wish any part of herself away, which meant she was still left with the question of what to do with the parts that loved Mahmed and the parts that wanted to fight at Hunyadi's side.
XV. Late March.
3 hours after leaving Adena, Radu, Cyprian, and Nazira heard a horse galloping madly toward them. They pulled their horses to the side of the road. Cyprian drew his sword, and Radu copied him, though he could not imagine who might be pursuing them. Certainly not Mahmed's forces. Perhaps one of the ambassadors had somehow discovered their deception and was riding to warn Cyprian. The horse, lathered and shivering, was drawn to an abrupt stop in front of them.
"He has killed them!" the rider shouted. "Valentine!"
Cyprian sheathed his sword. It was the thatch-haired boy who had helped them in the stables. Valentine tried to dismount, but fell roughly to the ground instead.
"He killed them!"
Cyprian jumped from his horse, grabbing Valentine.
"What do you mean? Why are you here?"
"He killed them. At the party. The Sultan killed them. He killed them all!"
Cyprian looked up at Radu and Nazira in horror.
"Did you know?"
Radu shook his head, numb with shock. He had not known. This, then, was Mahmed's declaration of war. Radu knew that lives would be lost. Of course they would. That was the price of a siege. But this felt so personal. So excessive. It felt more like murder than war. He had no doubt Mahmed had his reasons, and if Mahmed could explain them, Radu would understand. Unbidden, the image of the ambassadors lying on the gleaming tile floor, blood pooling around them, came to Radu's mind. Sour acid rose in his throat, threatening to come out. Surely there had been a reason.
"I did not know," he whispered.
Cyprian cradled the boy, still looking up at Radu and Nazira.
"Your timing saved my life. I owe you everything, and will call you friends to my dying day."
Nazira and Radu looked at each other as the full weight of what they were in the middle of finally descended on their shoulders. 3 days later, Radu's assumption that Nazira would require a lot of help on the road was heartily disproved. She had packed not only her essentials, but also provisions. Radu had not even thought of it, a fact that was not lost on Nazira. She batted her eyes slyly at him as she started a fire effortlessly and pulled out food from a saddlebag.
"We wives are very useful things to have around," she said.
Radu huddled close to the fire, grateful for the heat and for Nazira's skills.
"And all this time, I thought you were merely decorative."
Cyprian gave a small laugh, while Radu and Nazira traded a secret smile over how true her decorative role actually was. It was good to hear Cyprian laugh. He had understandably been in a pause since receiving news of the murders. "Assassinations," Radu corrected himself. "Political, not personal." That made them assassinations, not murders, which he found easier to stomach, though neither was pleasant.
"How much farther to the city?" Radu asked. "We should be there tomorrow."
They had taken a wandering route, fueled by the servant Valentine's terror and Cyprian's fear of pursuit. Radu and Nazira could not very well assure their travelling companions that Mahmed wanted them all to arrive safely, so they toiled along little used roads and through back country. Nazira dished out soup and then settled in next to Radu.
"You even remembered spices,"
Radu said. The soup was deliciously hot on his tongue.
"You married extremely well, Radu," she leaned against his free arm. Radu looked up to see Cyprian watching them with a forlorn, wistful expression. Nazira noticed it too.
Are you married, Cyprian?
He shook his head as though coming out of a daze and looked down at his bowl.
No.
I wondered if you were going home to a wife. Did you grow up in Constantinople?
He nodded, soaking the now stale flatbread in the soup to soften it.
Nazira continued asking questions, pumping Cyprian for information. Radu was both proud of her and sad that it was necessary.
Do you have family there still?
Yes. Sort of.
Cyprian's smile twisted and did not touch his eyes.
My father is Demetrius.
The despot?
Radu asked, surprised.
Constantine's two brothers, Demetrius and Thomas, ruled other areas in the Peloponnese. They were often at odds with each other, enemies as frequently as they were allies. Radu could not understand why one of them would allow his son to be an ambassador. It was a job of dubious prestige, thankless, and frankly dangerous. Ambassadors were as likely to be killed by foreign courts as their own if they brought back undesirable reports.
Cyprian nodded.
I am unfortunately a bastard. My mother was his mistress, so I am not as valuable as his legitimate sons. Constantine took me in and gave me a position in his court as a favor to my mother.
Was she from Cyprus?
Nazira asked.
Cyprian's expression softened.
She named me after her island. She always said I was her home, wherever she was.
Nazira sighed prettily.
I like her very much already. Have you ever been to Cyprus? I hear it is beautiful.
No. My mother died 4 years ago. I have meant to go and see her birthplace, but Constantine's need has been greater than my whims.
Is he so demanding, this uncle emperor of yours?
Nazira's tone was light and teasing.
Radu leaned back, wondering how else Nazira would prove he had drastically underestimated her.
Cyprian laughed.
No. That is what keeps me at his side. I would fear for my soul if I had it in me to repay all his kindness by abandoning him in his time of greatest need.
His expression turned dark once again.
I worry for how he will mourn if news of the ambassador's deaths reaches him before we do. He will think me murdered, and will blame himself. It was not his fault. I requested to go.
Radu frowned.
Why would you do that?
Cyprian took a moment to drain his soup, looking into the bowl like it could make more appear.
I liked my first visit. Adena seemed to me very beautiful and intriguing. I did not anticipate how things would have changed.
He looked back up, another attempt at a smile moving his lips, but not changing the sad shape of his eyes.
Besides, I had taken all that time to learn Turkish. It seemed a pity to waste it.
If I had known, I would have warned you all.
Even as he said it, Radu knew it was not true. He would have wanted to warn them, but he would not have gone against what Mahmed thought best.
Cyprian leaned forward as though he would grasp Radu's shoulder.
Then he sat back.
It is for the best. You did not. It would have alerted the Sultan to your disloyalty, and you would have died with us. No. It is better this way. I will mourn my companions, buoyed by the hope that you have brought us.
The soup had turned sour in Radu's stomach.
16. Early March.
Ambassadors are here. From Adena.
Stefan had hardly finished speaking when Lada ran from their camp to the castle. Radu would be with them. She had a lot to speak with him about, and she anticipated with delight presenting Wana to him. She pushed toward the throne room, trying to see over heads of others trying to get in. Two guards would not let her pass. Hunyadi found her there, arguing with them.
"My brother will be with the ambassadors," she said.
Hunyadi shook his head.
"No, they are all Turkish. But they brought this."
He held a letter addressed to her. Unlike last time, he gave it to her unopened. Lada clasped Hunyadi's hand, trying to hide her disappointment and frustration.
is from Radu. I asked his aid. If there is news of value, I will bring it to you. He nodded.